Welcome to this pre-election edition of Political Rewind. It really is upon us. Tomorrow, Election Day in the state of Georgia and, of course, across the country as the 2018 midterm elections finally draw to a close. We have a lot to talk about in terms of the elections, and we have a full house and a great panel here for that conversation. Of course, Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is sitting right next to me, and he's set to go.
Fingers crossed for a clean fight and a clear finish.
A victor by Wednesday morning sometime, so that it doesn't go into a runoff that would cause you to work harder than you already have been.
I've got a vacation riding on this.
Right. You read Jim in the Wednesday and Sunday edition of the paper and also in the Political Insider blog, part of myajc.com. Sam Olens, the former Attorney General of the state of Georgia, former Cobb County Commission chair, is with us in the studio. Sam, good to see you here.
Pleasure to be here,
Sam, Bob. How does it feel to be sitting this out, to not be on a ballot this time around? It's first time in a long, long time for you.
Hallelujah. Right.
Jordan Fuchs is also with us. She works for Landmark Communications, which is a Republican consulting and polling firm. You have Brad Raffensperger in this race, who, of course, is running for Secretary of State against John Barrow. Anybody else? I can't remember who your other candidates are.
I have
are.
A handful of clients all over the state, and I'm the campaign manager for Brad Raffensperger.
All right. We're going to talk a little about that because it's interesting, because that race, like a number of the down-ballot statewide races, appear to be really dead heats. We'll see. Howard Franklin's nodding when I say that. He, of course, is a Democratic political consultant. Hi, Howard.
Glad to be here. 24 more hours.
Yeah. And former Democratic congressman from Cobb County, Georgia, Buddy Darden. Hi, Buddy.
Hello. I'm back by popular demand.
That's right. You are. All right. Let's get right at this because, Jim, you know, this has been a contentious campaign, obviously, especially between Abrams and Kemp. But this weekend, it reached a new level when the Secretary of State's office, run by Brian Kemp, announced in a press release that there was an investigation. They had launched an investigation, possibly a criminal investigation, of whether the state Democratic Party attempted to breach the Georgia voter rolls. It hit like a complete bombshell.
Yeah, it's kind of the past history of Abrams and Kemp coming full circle and dominating. It's going to dominate the last 48 hours. Secretary of State Kemp announced that they had come across some emails. They had been sent some emails that indicated Democrats were aware of a vulnerability in the state's voter registration database, and had passed that along to certain people. But Kemp offered no evidence. He still has not. I mean, we know what some of those emails are now. I mean, I put those up this morning on the blog.
Yeah, we are not going to get into the granular detail on this right now because it's a complicated story. But Stephen Fowler, GPB political reporter, and I sat down and did a podcast on this just about half an hour, 45 minutes ago. Stephen's been working with ProPublica, the nonprofit national news organization, to get to the bottom of this. And if you go to that podcast, we're going to be posting it this afternoon, and you can hear it in more detail. But here's the gist of it. Somebody named Richard Wright, Jim, and we still don't really know who Richard Wright is, sent an email to a woman who is a volunteer with the state Democratic Party, Rachel Small.
Right.
And he said in that email, I've discovered there's a vulnerability in the state voter system. And apparently he sent her the details of the code of how you could
in an attachment. And Ms. Small passed that up to her boss, who was head of the voter protection program, and she's not a technical expert, so she sent it on to two cybersecurity experts, one of whom sits on Brian Kemp's commission that's assigned the task of finding new voting machines.
The SAFE Commission.
Mm-hmm, the SAFE Commission. Thank you.
Okay. And at the same time, this went to an attorney named David Cross, who's been involved in voter cases, efforts to go after the Secretary of State's office on different voter issues. David Cross sent it to the FBI. And somewhere in the middle of all this, it got to Brian Kemp's office.
Yeah, Cross sent it to the FBI. The FBI, there's an email we found that in which an FBI fellow says he had informed Kemp about this.
Okay. All right. So let's not go in any more detail on that because it gets complicated. So, buddy, what do you make of the fact that in the 11th hour, you have... The Secretary of State, the candidate for governor in the Republican Party, announcing this investigation.
I think you can absolutely and totally disregard anything Brian Kemp has to say within 24 hours of Election Day. We've had enough of this back and forth. Let's go ahead and vote and get this behind. I don't think this is nearly so exciting to me as it is to you, Bill, in all due respect. And I think this is just part of what happens when you're this close to election.
Sam?
I don't understand when it became a good thing to call yourself a white hat and try and breach a government site. It seems to me that anyone who tries to breach a site should be... going in front of a grand jury, you know, to be able to sit there and say, I want to break in, but then I'm going to tell you I did it, so I become a hero, is wrong.
So, okay, let me, Howard Jordan, let me get you into this. We don't know much about Richard Wright at all. So we don't know that he has any relation with the Democratic Party in Georgia when he attempted to do this, although we get that he forwarded this to the Democratic Party.
Sure.
By white hat, Sam, of course, means someone who tries to find security breaches for supposedly
for good
reasons.
That's right. And I think, if nothing else, we do know that the Democratic Party officials who were in receipt of these emails did try to authenticate, try to verify. There's been a lot of concern from, I believe, Democrats and Republicans about safeguarding the election, the ability for the machines or the system to be hacked. And so I think part of the issue here, the same way that Sam said, I don't know why folks want to be white hats. It's weird to see a Secretary of State finally telling on himself and saying I preside over a system that maybe has some vulnerabilities that I haven't acknowledged in all this time.
Jordan?
I guess we don't really have a whole lot of information out there. We're all reading the same newspapers and we really don't know what occurred. So I guess the real question is, does this have any impact on tomorrow? And if you look at the polls, there's very few undecideds at this point, just across the board. And we're at 2% or 3%. So I don't think this is a game changer for either campaign.
No, I agree. I don't think it's going to affect the race that much. I think what it has changed is this debate that we're having over whether a Secretary of State should preside over his or her own election on the ballot.
Yeah, that seems to be a clear
right.
question.
But
here.
But to answer Sam, when did white hats become a thing here? In May, Governor Nathan Deal vetoed Senate Bill 315, which was a cybersecurity bill that would have made exactly what you were talking about illegal, and he was met four square with all sorts of opposition from cybersecurity firms who said that this is exactly how security databases are made more secure, not less secure. When friendly people probe a system and try to find out whether it is vulnerable or not, the Pentagon has a program on just that right now.
But I mean, one person's friend is another person's enemy. I mean, who gets to choose who's a saint? And you know, the fact of the matter is, it's been my experience that the folks that claim vulnerability then immediately call you and tell you that if you buy a whole bunch of product from them, they can make your system safer.
Well, it is certainly true that for the most part, we think of white hat hackers, as they're known, as operating in the corporate sector and not so much in the government sector. But, buddy, it looks like you were about to respond to something Sam just said.
I was just going to say, as a general proposition, sadly, the state of Georgia has gotten a black eye throughout this entire election due to the controversy that's come up, one right after another. And this is just one more event that shows us that we need to come up, regardless of who wins this race, we need to come up with some way to separate the politics and the elected officials from the voting process.
All right, that's right. And Jim Galloway just put the question on the table. Kemp has been under fire by Democrats throughout this election for running the election, overseeing the election as Secretary of State while running as a candidate. Yes, we know Kathy Cox did the same thing as a Democrat when she ran for governor. On the other hand, Karen Handel stepped down when she was a candidate
for a different reason. She stepped down because she wanted to accept
money.
Donations.
But she still stepped down. Max Cleland stepped down. He's the only one who seemed to do it because he felt it was a conflict. But that does.
Okay. Max didn't do it for that reason either.
He raised money too?
Max wanted to raise money and run for the Senate.
All right. I think as long as we're offering distinctions here with differences, I think part of the reason that this is such a big issue, maybe because we're in the age of the digital attacks, and we've got, before Brian Kemp was a candidate for governor, we had all sorts of issues with our Secretary of State's office, with voting machines, with data being surreptitiously shared. And I think that is a big part of the reason that this has been so much attention has been given to
all
this
right,
stuff.
So, Jordan, I mean, again, the big story is on the table. Should the next legislature look very seriously at passing a statute which would suggest you can't oversee an election if you're running for statewide office or for any office for that matter?
I have no issue with it. And Brian Kemp is finishing out his term and his job, and he's doing just that. So I personally don't have an issue with it.
That was what Kemp told reporters today. He got a lot of reporters showed up as he was departing for another one of his tours around the state. And he said, look, I'm doing my job. This is what I'm supposed to be doing as Secretary of State.
Jordan, since you're Brad Raffensperger's campaign manager, has this issue come up at all in the Secretary of State's
race? We have not been asked that. And I don't believe it's been something that was asked in any of our debates as of yet. So.
All right. So here's the other part of this that I'm curious about. Jim, I think I'm right that this is a unique situation from this point of view, if nothing else. The Secretary of State's office does not tend to put out news releases announcing an effort to hack the voter system and the target of an investigation with someone who may have tried to do that. They certainly didn't in the Kennesaw State University case when you were president of KSU, Sam. They didn't go out there. They didn't announce that they were looking into a problem. The problem was found and they had to respond to it, right?
Well, actually, the problem was 5 months before I was ever at Kennesaw State, and I was the one who contacted the GBI and FBI to start an investigation.
That's my point. Yeah. So, in other words, Jim, this is an unusual step and certainly one of the reasons people tend to think it's a politicization of a problem.
Well, and to speak just kind of a little bit on Kemp's side here, I think what might have happened, and I don't know if you and Mr. Fowler talked about this on your podcast, but when Democrats passed that info on the vulnerability along, it got into the hands of a cyber journalist blog that contacted Kemp and was looking for comment. So, you know, it's possible that Kemp's people thought they were about to get tagged with a last minute Democratic hit and were trying to flip it.
And the hit dog always hollers.
Howard, let's be clear about something here before we move on. Number one, we don't know because we won't learn until there's an investigation whether there was in fact an actual hack of the voting system. Now, the Secretary of State's office immediately issued a report saying, no, everything is fine. But when you listen to cybersecurity experts on this, they say, well, it takes a little more research before you can ascertain that. So let's assume that's the case. And on the other hand, we don't know whether Richard Wright, even if it was in an informal way, was acting for the benefit of the state Democratic Party. We just don't know that. We got to be careful about it. They, of course, say no, But we don't know any of this with certainty as people go to the polls tomorrow.
No, absolutely not. And as Buddy said, 24 hours before an election, you got to take it with a grain of salt. But I do think this could be the subject of much litigation after the election is completed. And if we're not in a runoff, I wouldn't be surprised to hear some election lawyers popping up and offering some suits.
All right. We're going to move on. But again, the podcast that Stephen Fowler and I did, Robert, you've already got, Robert Jimison's already got it posted. Thank you, Robert. So you can go to the Political Rewind. You can to our podcast at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. Or you can listen to it on our website at gpbnews.org. Before we get off this subject, and we'll also have the ProPublica article put up there once that's published. Buddy, before we finally get off this subject, you said something interesting. You said, I'm not as excited about this story as you are, Bill. Why, to what extent do you think this contributes to an atmosphere in which voters are no longer certain that they can be confident that their vote is being counted accurately or without some manipulation?
Well, I think this has been talked about the whole thing, and I really don't look as this as anything new. I think it's just trying to more and more cast doubt among the public. But as far as I'm concerned, I think Jordan's already said this. I don't think a single vote will be changed, and I don't think a single result will happen from it unless there are a few lawsuits when it's over. But again, I think ballot security is important. We've been debating this at least for the last year or so, and I don't really look on this as anything new.
But that isn't my question, Jordan. My question is whether Georgia voters might begin to wonder whether their vote has been properly recorded, whether the outcome of an election is accurate, fair, and honest. Have you ever polled that question?
I personally have never polled it.
I mean,
it,
no. Landmark, okay.
No, as we've been campaigning, I mean, we're getting everyday voters asking about this issue, and they want clean lists. They want their votes protected. And so, yes, it is being brought up in the campaign.
Okay, let me just jump in here for a second and say to your question, Bill, I think it's not a question of voters beginning to wonder whether or not their votes are going to be protected. It's a question that's been ongoing for a long time. I remember when Kathy Costas was Secretary of State, and we had a small but vocal group of probably in between the parties that was calling for paper ballots. And as someone who has a client and has been to most of the Safe Commission meetings this year, there's, again, a growing contingent of voters and a growing political dissatisfaction with the answer that we can't produce or won't produce paper receipts.
Sam?
So two things. One, you know, when I was with Cobb County, we were using modems from the precincts to the central office for the votes.
You still use one at your house, probably, Sam.
And I'm still on Mindspring.
Right.
And, so I don't think the system's been what we should expect for a long time. Having said that, too many people are quick to blame the Secretary of State. He doesn't have the budget to approve a new voting system. It's incumbent on the legislature in January on putting the money together for the state to get a very viable, secure system for the future.
And people forget how big a decision that was back in 2006?
Yeah, it was enormous.
Because heretofore, 159 counties had financed and decided their own path on voting machines.
Well, wait. The machines we're using today were put in place well before 2006, right?
But that was the first big election, I think. Was it not?
No, I think before that. I think quite a bit.
You're right. No. It was 2002. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It was 2002.
Yeah. And the metro counties all bought extra machines because the state didn't provide enough.
Right. Right. All right. Let's do this. Let's get a break out of the way. It is the day before the election. Let's get the break done. We'll come back. Jordan, you have some interesting information. You've been crunching numbers on the early vote, which, of course, closed on Friday. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about where the governor's race has headed in the last 24 hours or so, where it's going to end up tonight. And we'll do that. But first, this message.
It's a hard-fought election season, and GPB is here to make sure you have what you need to make that crucial vote. I'm Grant Blankenship in Macon. I've covered roadblocks to voter registration and reported on efforts to keep polling places open in South Georgia. Listen to GPB as we bring you information that helps you understand what's next for our state. We'll have live coverage election night starting at 8. GPB News. Stand with the facts.
Jordan, we've all been, or not all of us, but many of us have really become addicted to a website called Georgia Votes, which is being operated by a man who's in marketing for a living, but he's just sort of taken on this role of wanting to gather information from the secretary.
Let us say thank you very much.
Yeah. I sent a tweet out the other day thanking him for all his work. Okay, let me share with you his numbers as of the close of early voting on Friday, and then you add to what he had to say. 2,080,674 people voted early, which is twice as many, I believe, as voted early in the last midterm election, and comes not that far from the total number of votes in that election, which was like 2.6 million. He says that vote breaks down to 57% of it were white voters, 30.3% are African-American voters, 55% were women, 42% are males. So we've got that. We'll put that in the back of our heads. Now tell us what you've been looking at.
Okay, so what I have is about 1.2 million of the early voters are white voters, and about 700,000 were African Americans. I'm rounding up.
And he's got the same numbers you do,
right.
So go ahead.
And it represents about 61%. What we found that was interesting is that in terms of new registered voters, new folks coming out, only about 6% had no record of ever coming out and voting. 10% hadn't voted in the last 4 years. And so if we're talking about kind of gauging how intense these campaigns are going, there aren't any real new voters coming out. It's not significant. So that's what we're seeing.
So let's talk about that for a minute. Sam, Stacey Abrams' entire case for winning the governorship has been to expand the voter base, to bring new voters to the polls. Now, that could happen tomorrow, but apparently, according to Jordan's figures—
Bill, let me offer a little clarification
all right,
here.
All right.
I would tell you that her prosecution of this race is about bringing inconsistent voters back to the polls, right? So when we've talked about how she could win this, it was getting that same 1.8 million voters from a presidential election, largest voter registration in Georgia's history, on the eve of Barack Obama's historic nomination and then successful race as president. So getting that 1.8 million to show up in a midterm election, which almost never happens,
but
not necessarily brand new people who are completely new to this.
Except, Sam, the New Georgia Project, which she spearheaded, was all about registering new voters and bringing them to the polls. So it's kind of a mix of what maybe Howard's saying and bringing new voters out, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I frankly think the numbers from advanced voting put Kemp in a stronger position than he expected.
Interesting.
Well, it's look, the number that stands out to me is 55% of women, of the early voters are women. That's a strong number, and you wonder how many of those are in the burbs, and how many of those are
don't like shotguns. Maybe?
Don't like shotguns. Maybe it's a. I will tell you what I did run into a Republican state lawmaker this week who on Sunday morning who was kind of concerned, and others are too.
And Fox News did a poll that came out yesterday that said 57% of early voters were identified as Democrats. Now, you know, I'm not expecting
in Georgia.
I'm sorry, we're just talking about
just
Georgia.
Want to be clear on what we've got here. What else you got you want to share with us?
So from what we found and what I found interesting was about 51% of the early voters for African Americans were tagged back into our system as active voters, meaning that they had a record of voting at least one time. For white voters, we had about 46%.
Does that tell you?
That this is a historic moment for Georgia, and I think that Abrams is rallying her team, and historically African Americans do vote Democrat, and so this is a historic moment.
I would like to say, I hope it is a historic moment. However, even though this doesn't by any means convey my sentiments here, I happen to agree with Sam that the white turnout, from what I've seen, especially in North Georgia, is also extraordinary. And while there has been a tremendous amount of effort to bring out the African-American vote and the new vote, it also has been quite a reaction by the Republicans to get their people out here. So I'm not very optimistic about where we're going. And by no means does this reflect my own view as a staunch Democrat, but the numbers are somewhat telling.
I think you still have to favor Brian Kemp as a potential winner Tuesday. I think the odds still favor him. But you're right about this emphasis on the rural vote. I mean, this is where Mike Pence was all on what was it Thursday last mm-hmm. Last Thursday, and it's significant that Stacey Abrams campaign, or at least DeBose Porter with the Democratic Party, wrote that letter to Nathan Deal, wanting to extend when the time period in which absentee ballots can be reserved, because both Daugherty County and Abrams was in Richmond County, I think, over the weekend. Both of those are Stacey Abrams. The Republican formula for winning really depends on running up the vote very, very high in rural areas, and she's trying to cut into that. She's trying to answer that in both Daugherty County and Augusta.
Yeah, and certainly because we've got African-American voting populations that she would like to see get to the polls in those counties. My understanding, based on the article that you've posted, was that she wrote to the governor on October 26th saying, we think, given the storms and other issues, especially in Daugherty County.
Well, the mail is still being routed through Tallahassee.
Okay, and there were other problems, too, apparently technical problems, that she said, please extend the window that you'll accept absentee votes. According to the piece you posted, no response ever from the governor.
No.
Okay.
And if you look at the numbers up in Walker County, up in Catoosa County, in Union County, in Clayton, Georgia, which is, of course, not Clayton County by any means, but if you look at that band across North Georgia, the white turnout is overwhelming.
All right. So given that we know that Kemp wants rural votes, given we know that he wants to run up the tally with white voters, let's see what we all think about the appearance of President Trump in Macon yesterday.
Under Republican leadership, Georgia is safer, Georgia is stronger, and Georgia is winning like never before. And I'll tell you what, I know Brian. He will take it to new heights, heights that you wouldn't even believe. I know him. This guy doesn't stop, which is what you want. He's an incredible manager. He's been successful all the way up and down the line. This man will bring it to heights that you wouldn't believe even today with those great numbers.
So President Trump and Macon, Sam, this is a little bit like there's a reality show. I think it's called 90 Day Fiancé, where you meet the woman, you're a man, you're going to marry. And within 90 days, it's a love match. That's apparently what's happened with Trump and Kemp, because he didn't know much about him before he endorsed him in the runoff.
I'm sorry, is there a question somewhere?
Look, to have, yes, the question is, having a president who remains popular, he's right at 50%, and, of course, Republicans in Georgia put him up at 90%, come in for you. Good thing, not so good.
Well, it's the same thing with Oprah and Obama coming for the Democrat candidate. I mean, it drives up the base. But as Jordan said, you know, candidly, we're talking about the 3% who allegedly haven't decided, but all the efforts being put on getting the base to the polls.
There you go, right.
And I think the answer is the base is going to the poll. The question is the 3%.
That's a very good question and observation, because this year, for the first time in 20 years, I decided I was going to vote on Election Day. And guess what? I've been besieged now with phone calls and letters and so forth saying, George, you voted in the past. We need you to vote in the future. So, and I've been talking to my wife who voted 2 weeks ago. They haven't even called.
Right. Nobody. But your situation is kind of unique because more and more people are now voting early. And what we're seeing is a realignment of how people are voting. 20 years ago, you know, you voted on the day of the election. Now you have the opportunity to kind of plan for it. And so what that's going to change in campaign world is that you're going to see more advertising happening 4 weeks out, 5 weeks out.
Okay, Jordan, tell me. Okay, I voted early on Friday, the last day of early voting. Mm-hmm. How quickly will the campaigns know that I went to the polls? And what do you folks do about it? Do you take me off the robocall lists?
Is that what you're hoping for?
Do you save a dollar? Not necessarily. Not me. But do you save a dollar by taking me off a mailing list?
It just depends on the client.
And how quickly?
It depends on the client's budget. But sure, we'll take folks off if they've already voted. Why am I going to waste ad dollars talking to somebody who I've either already has already voted?
Howard, so, I'm sorry. Did you want to finish it?
Go ahead.
Sam just made an important point that, you know, we have very few undecideds, but this is about driving your voters to the polls if they haven't already voted. And, of course, the question that's always asked, especially when it comes to President Trump and, for that matter, Barack Obama, and we're going to hear from him in a minute, are you also energizing the people who can't stand either of those people?
I think that's definitely become a reality that political operators have to contend with at this point. I went to the rally with President Obama at my alma mater, Morehouse, and people were beside themselves with excitement to see their president, campaigning for Stacey in Atlanta for sure. But I'm sure in much the same way, there are plenty of people who are not Obama supporters who are saying, hey, we see what's going on in Southwest Atlanta, and we are responding in kind. And the same thing is obviously true for President Trump. I think that's a good observation.
Jordan, you're looking at your pad. You have numbers.
Yeah. So who attended the Obama event? There were about 6,600 folks that attended. In comparison, the Trump event that took place, there were 25,000. And so if we're talking about a very small margin of people who are undecided, and we're trying to gauge momentum, you can kind of gauge by those events.
Well, the only thing you can gauge there is that we, as Democrats, probably picked the wrong venue. I went to Morehouse. We got 6,000 seats, probably maybe 8,000 people when you include the floor. But we didn't pick a stadium that would have accommodated many more people.
Buddy,
I want to tell all of you that I had a Sonny Perdue sighting about an hour and a half ago. I was out at West Paces Ferry Shopping Center, and he was campaigning hand-to-hand for Brian Kemp and came into, of all places, Tommy's Barbershop, which is a Republican bastion. And so he's out there on the ground himself.
Let's, before we go forward, as long as we were talking about President Obama, we've already heard from Trump. It took Obama a long time. He tried to be restrained during the first year and a half of the Trump presidency, but clearly he's been energized and he's going around the country making speeches with remarks similar to what he said at Morehouse on Friday.
The consequences of any of us staying home really are profound because America's at a crossroads. The health care of millions of people are on the ballot. Making sure working families get a fair shake is on the ballot. But maybe most of all, the character of our country is on the ballot. In the closing weeks of this election, we have seen repeated, constant, incessant, non-stop attempts to divide us with rhetoric that is designed to make us angry and make us fearful, with images and rhetoric that are designed to exploit our history of racial and ethnic and religious division. The good news is, in 4 days, Georgia, you can reject that politics.
So, Jim, Jordan made an interesting point comparing the crowds down in Macon and then at Morehouse on Friday. when I see a Trump rally, and goodness knows we've seen enough of them in the last couple of weeks, I'm never quite sure whether the energy in that crowd is really an energy that converts to going to the polls. There certainly is a sense that when you finally get a moment to be in the audience with Donald Trump, you know the play that you're involved with, and so the tropes come out. Hillary Clinton, lock her up, whatever. And the crowd loves being now participants in something they've watched on TV. The question is, does it really convert to votes?
Well, yeah, the question is, how many of those, what you said, 25,000 people? How many of those people are registered voters? And it is an interesting question because Republicans will tell you that in rural Georgia, and this rally was held in Macon, that unregistered white voters are just as plentiful as unregistered black voters.
Yeah, of course, on the other side of that, Sam, is when you're speaking to a group of Morehouse students, and Howard, you were there, so you should weigh in after Sam does. These are young people who may or may not turn out either. I mean, millennials and those younger than millennials don't exactly have a great record of showing up at the polls.
So I'm going to answer the question differently.
Okay.
Historically, the Republican Party was split between the social conservatives and the fiscal conservatives. Now it's about Donald Trump in the Republican Party. So I think the question you're asking is really more how many folks that are into Donald Trump then show up to the midterm election, then get involved in the midterm. And as he is saying more and more, he's not on the ballot, but it's about him. I think it's going to be effective.
I'll say this. I think there's been a lot of reporting in the last 3 or 4 days about an uptick from young people, voters under the age of 30, so up to 29. I think there's what I saw last was a 19% increase in willingness to vote based on polling. I don't know if that is actually reflected in exit polls or not, but it seems as if, you know, and I'll be the first one to admit, you know, we talk about the youth vote virtually every 2 to 4 years. And every now and again, they surprise us, right? For 2008 and Barack Obama, they surprised us. And I think what Stacey Abrams has been setting up this entire time is another one of those surprising elections 10 years later. That's it.
Buddy?
Well, Trump has made this all about him, like he thinks everything else is. And so if Republicans come out ahead, it's all due to him. However, if they don't, then he'll have to live with it. But I'll say this, he's taken them on. And by the way, Obama did convince me.
All right. So let's keep talking about it. You know, we've been watching the Florida governor's race, of course, Andrew Gillum against Ron DeSantis. And we know that that race, unfortunately, from almost the beginning, has been infected with pretty blatant racial remarks that have been troubling to an awful lot of people. Sonny Perdue was down there campaigning for DeSantis the other day, and he got into the mix on that. I'm not sure if there hadn't been a whole body of racial comments leading up to what Sonny said, it would stand out. It would be something we'd even look at. But I want to play what Sonny said, talk very briefly about what that means. But then I want to bring it back to the Georgia race, where we also have an African-American running for governor. But here's Sonny Perdue speaking to a crowd about Ron DeSantis in Florida.
And good, sound leadership so these young people can enjoy the Florida that you've enjoyed over the years. States around the country that have messed it up by who they elected. Public policy matters. Leadership matters. And that's why this election is so cotton-picking important to the state of Florida. I hope you all don't mess it up.
Cotton-picking important. Jim?
It's a phrase that, when you and I were growing up, didn't have the overtone that it does now.
Right. Right. But that's the reason I say that under other circumstances, it might have not gone anywhere. It might have been worth a minute. But unfortunately, in the atmosphere that's been created down there, it changes.
Yeah. And basically, when I heard it, it was my mother asking me if I was out of my cotton picking mind.
Buddy?
I totally agree here, is that if it hadn't been in the issue to start with, this isolated incident by itself would not have gotten any attention whatsoever. But sadly, taken in the context of the whole race going on in Florida, and incidentally, Florida does not have a habit of nominating its best candidates, I might add. And so you've got a situation down here of everything. We think we got problems in Georgia. I think Florida probably has more problems than we do, but yeah. In any event, I don't think he really meant anything by it, but
well, Howard, you've now heard the opinion of three white guys. Yeah. Your turn.
Old white guys.
Old white guys.
I'm glad you made that distinction for the listeners at home.
I'm apparently the young one.
No, I think, buddy, you hit the nail on the head, in part at least. I think not only are we talking about a phrase that for many people carries some, you know, some overtones, I think he essentially was saying what DeSantis said the day after he won the nomination. He said, we can't afford to monkey this up. And essentially, Sonny Perdue said the same thing, right? That we could be making a mistake in choosing our state's next leader. Now, I mean, I'd love to give him a pass. I don't know him personally. Maybe some of the men around this table do. But this man is a two-term governor. He's a secretary. He ought to know better than to get in front of a public rally and to make these kind of comments.
All right. Let me bring it to Georgia. Jordan, we've seen overt racism or overt racist remarks made in the Florida race. I'm sure there are things flying under the radar here. There's a whisper campaign going on in some parts of the state about Abrams. But I shouldn't even say I'm sure. I don't know whether there has been or not. But we seem to have, for the most part, avoided the kind of overt racist rhetoric here. Galloway's frowning because he doesn't agree with me. You better go ahead first, and then we'll turn to Jordan.
Well, I would say in large groups, settings, you may be right. When the cameras are out
right.
there,
right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
But there's something above a whisper campaign.
Okay.
But when TV cameras are focused, there's a recognition that this is a state that's different from Florida in large part because of Atlanta, and you have a Republican suburban district that's swingable, if you will. But if you go to and we have former politicians here who can attest to it. If you go to small town Georgia, small right. venue Georgia, and when the cameras aren't on, the language does become something out of the 70s in some cases.
I get that. But that is really my point, Jordan, that mm-hmm. we're not seeing it picked up by media and broadcast across the country. It may be happening in these private conversations, except, and here's why I brought it up, a hateful robocall, which the Kemp campaign immediately spoke out against. You know, we talked about whether we were going to play it or not. And Robert thinks we should. Tom doesn't. I don't want to play it now that we're sitting here on live radio, except it is someone pretending to be Oprah Winfrey with one of the most offensive efforts at an African-American dialect. Talking about being the magic Negro Oprah Winfrey, and it goes downhill from there. So race has played a role, unfortunately.
And it quite clearly sounds like a kook or somebody who is trying to play one. And so just think about the political environment that we're in. I don't see how this is helpful to anybody's campaign. This is the language used is very extreme, very silly. It doesn't sound real.
Sam, does a minority candidate suffer when you go to, say, rural Georgia? And are there is it harder for them to get elected?
You know, I ran into plenty of folks in Metro Atlanta that weren't too thrilled with the Jew running statewide. So,
right.
I'm not willing to buy the fact it's only rural Georgia. You know, I think, look, Stacey Abrams is a very bright person, and she comes across as a very bright person. And nowadays, especially with the recent incidents in Pittsburgh, et cetera, there's just no place for hate.
And that's why I thought it was essential that we have at least a brief conversation about it. We saw Pittsburgh. We saw the Kroger shooting in Kentucky, where two African Americans were shot down for no other reason that they're black. We saw it at Mother Emanuel Baptist Church. So any effort to bring race into a race to a race here is something that we need to point out and say is simply not acceptable.
So the one of the neatest things was the Muslim community raising an awful lot of money for the Pittsburgh Jewish community. It was the African-American minister from Charleston who went up to Pittsburgh to meet with the rabbi.
Yeah, from Mother Emanuel.
At Tree of Life, because out of darkness comes light. And you see more people actually working together now to sit there and say, we're better than this.
All right. We've got to get another break in. When we come back, some interesting new data about two congressional races in the North Metro suburbs. You're listening to Political Rewind.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear revelations from well-known actors, like Zach Galifianakis on the story behind his last name.
It's actually shortened, Terry. My real last name is Galifianakisberg. That's an exclusive for your show.
Fresh Air, bringing you some of the biggest names in American culture and some of the most difficult to pronounce. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and streaming live at gpbnews.org.
We got to win this and win this the right way.
Bring it! Bring it on!
For all the results on election night, stay with NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Sarah McCammon. NPR's political team will be live all night watching the close races around the country. Listen on election night, then wake up and hear what the outcome means for America on Morning Edition.
Critical elections, essential coverage.
NPR News.
Join us for all the results on election night starting at 8 here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. You just heard the promotion for NPR's election night coverage. Well, you know what? We're going to be here throughout the evening with our version of election coverage. We'll take much of what NPR does and give you the national picture, but we're also going to spend a lot of time right here talking about statewide races. I'll be overseeing, hosting our coverage. We'll have our reporters in the field giving you information about what's happening at the campaigns. So it's going to look like this. From 7 to 8, we're going to be doing a live TV show leading into our radio coverage, which will start at 8 and run, who knows when we'll get out of here, considering how close many people think this race is going to be. So you can listen to us on statewide GPB radio. We'll be on Facebook Live that entire time. So please join us for what we hope is going to be a really fascinating evening. All right. Real quick, Jim Galloway, all of a sudden, you know, we've said throughout this campaign that, you know, what we're used to here is Republicans coming home. These races look close, and then all of a sudden the Republicans surge. Well, up in the 6th and 7th district, the data crunchers, the Larry Sabatos of the world, the Cook Report, 538, they're suddenly showing it's possible that the 6th district, Karen Handel, Lucy McBath, could be a dead heat right now.
The Cook Report this morning kind of shifted from likely GOP to toss up.
Yeah.
So it's and you have to wonder. We're now what 10 days away from the Tree of Life shooting, and you wonder how much that particular incident might have had on the 6th district, which has an extensive Jewish population in East Cobb.
And you've got a candidate who's been running for gun safety measures.
Right.
Jordan, mm-hmm. What is your sense about what's happening up there?
I don't have a...
You haven't been tracking it. No. You got Raffensperger on your mind. Howard, what do you think? McBath? There's also, although the 7th still is in the lean Republican column for most data crunchers, there are a number of Democrats who feel very optimistic that they think Carolyn Bordeaux might be able to win that thing.
Well, yes, the data historically would say that it's a conservative district, but campaigns matter. And in this case, I would tell you Bordeaux has been running the more aggressive, the more polished and professional campaign. I think...
You mean compared to the 6th, to Lucy McBath?
Compared to Rob Woodall, the incumbent.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just got up on television in the last week, and he just hasn't been a prodigious fundraiser or someone who's really used a lot of shoe leather in his reelection efforts. But I think both the women are attracting national attention. I mean, I got a call from a Vice reporter last night who was interested in insights on the race. And I think that just because of the sheer amount of interest and activity, you got to watch them very closely.
But I'm hearing, Howard, tell me if I'm wrong. I'm hearing from Democrats that that they're more optimistic about the 7th than the 6th.
I'm just excited about the whole thing, just to see we've got some congressional races, because they ought to be congressional races. They ought to be contested congressional races. And right now in Georgia, as all of you know, it's all one way or another. And we've grouped all the black folks together and put all the white folks around each other. And we're gerrymandered in such a way that there have been no contests. So I think this is a good, healthy, and exciting time, regardless of how these come out.
I will say about the 6th Congressional District, I know the New York Times attempted to poll it and showed Macbeth, I believe, leading. And if you look at their kind of internal numbers, they made 15,000 phone calls in this district and only got 200 responses.
Right, yeah.
So it's not reliable.
Well, that's right. But the Times says that. In fact, that's the whole purpose of what the Times is doing with their live polling, is to show how difficult your work can be when you do polling. So they've said the fact that we've had so few responses, you shouldn't take these results too seriously. So
exactly.
I wasn't even thinking about them when I said that Macbeth may be pulling even there.
Well, both Sam and I have represented that part of the county from time to time, and it's reliably Republican, but it's more independent than it is Republican. As I've said many times, if folks out in East Cobb are Chamber of Commerce Republicans, they're not carry-a-gun-to-church Republicans, and there's a big difference. They're not necessarily Trump Republicans, even though you've got a lot of them. Now, I'll defer to Sam, because he's run out there since I have.
No, I think the mistake that the Democrat Party may have made, and we won't know for...
The Democratic Party.
Democratic Party.
Thank you.
Is they put opposition in all races instead of choosing the races that were potentially easier to win. So I see the suburban women that lean Democrat getting involved in campaigns that are never going to win. Whereas if you took that same volunteer and put them in a race where there's a 50-50 shot,
well, you're
they
never
going to
win them until you contest them, right?
Bill, we're running out of time, right?
Yes, you have about
all right,
a minute.
Let's go around the table. What's your upset? What is tomorrow's upset? That each one and Jordan, you can't pick Raffensperger. What is your surprise of Tuesday?
Do you have one, Howard?
I would throw out, I think John Barrow has limited a lot of lips of a lot of Democrats. Hate to do it to you, Jordan. It just matters. She's really nice. But I think
you're nice, too.
Barrow is running against Raffensperger for Secretary of State.
Even though I agree with Howard about Barrow, still I think the surprise might be on the Public Service Commission. I think the two candidates have an excellent shot because they have a built-in issue.
Sam, you got one?
I agree with Howard. If the most likely Democrat to win Tuesday is Barrow.
Boy, you've been hearing that, Jordan. It's not like this is news to you. Not that it's true, but that a lot of people think he's the one who might cause problems for Republicans.
The polls are so close.
Yeah.
I think if anybody is going into this very confident, you have the wrong pollster. So I think this is a very close race across the board.
Okay. We're completely out of time. I love that last question. You don't get to pick an upset because you're
thank
the
goodness.
Journalist in the room. I'm just I just talk. Thank you all so much for being here for Political Rewind on this election eve. We're back here tomorrow on Election Day to talk more about what's happening out there in the field. And then we're with you throughout the night tomorrow night. I'm Bill Nygut. Thanks for joining us. See you tomorrow.